tuned to yesterday, showcasing programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark Livonier, and there's four programs in this hour of continuing series. Later on, the continuations of The Man in the Iron Mask, Firefighters, The Adventures of Marco Polo as well, but first episode 5 of 5 of The Valentine Matter on yours truly, Johnny Deller, from November 4th, 1955 on CBS.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Deller.
Hey, what are you doing at the Valentine House?
Get a car out here quick, Inspector. Terry Valentine's just been shot. Two guys
now
showed
slow
up...
Slow down. When did all this happen?
A few seconds ago.
Ambulance?
No good, DeBaca. She died in my arms.
Oh. Well, do you think they're still around there?
They must be. I'm going looking.
Now, wait a minute. This is a police matter. You stay put. I'll have a car there in 5 minutes and you can... Johnny, I heard that. Your gun. Now, look, you're all wound up. Don't do anything. Put...
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator...
Yours truly, Johnny Deller. Expense account, submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Deller to the New Britain Mutual Insurance Company, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of further expenditures during my investigation of the Valentine matter. Dan Valentine, ex-gangster, and, of course, your policyholder. But then his wife was killed, too. Then his lawyer. Then his daughter. The girl that I... 30 seconds after Terry Valentine died in my arms, I was stumbling down the gravel path that led from her house to the road. It had all happened so suddenly, I can't say that what I did from there on or what I felt was entirely rational. All I know is I hadn't heard a car leave the area, which meant the two killers were still somewhere nearby. Then, in the dim light, I saw the car. A man was climbing into it. Hey, stop! Stop or I'll shoot! Stop! Get out of there. Get out of there and get your hands up.
I'm a hit. I'm afraid to move.
Come on, get out. Come on.
I'm coming.
You two, come on.
It's no use on him, mister. He used up. You got him real good. I need a doctor. Help me get to a doctor.
Stop right there.
Doctor.
Stand still.
You pretty tough fella.
What's your name?
Sisto.
Sisto what?
It's good enough for you. I need a doctor, bad.
Listen. Ooh. Tell it to me. Tell it to me right now. If you don't tell it to me now, you'll never tell it to anybody. Tell it!
No. Tell it! I need a doctor.
Tell it!
I die first.
Johnny! What is this? Who's he?
He's gonna kill me.
Now, you better give me that gun, Johnny. The state will take care of him. Thanks.
I should have done it. I wanted to do it.
I know, son. Come on, let's get out of here.
But I didn't get out of there. I waited around while they dug the body of the other man out of the smashed-up car, and while they carried the still, limp form of Teresa Valentine away. She was the third member of the family who had died violently within 3 days.
Sorry about it, Donna.
Inspector, I was hoping I might have been wrong. But she wasn't dead.
Oh, you weren't wrong. Which one shot her?
Huh?
The dead one? Or the one we still got in the hospital?
Oh, I don't know. Both of them, I guess.
You don't feel like talking, but I'm just trying to pin it down.
Well, what about him?
Can't get much out of him so far. He's in pretty bad shape.
Let me ask him some questions, Inspector. I'm no police officer. I don't have to obey any rules.
Now take it easy, kid. You were about to do that once, and we'd be holding you for murder if you'd gone ahead. I know how you feel about Teresa Valentine.
Has he said anything at all?
Nothing. We found papers on him and the other one that makes them brothers, Sisto and Darby Chianti, from New York. So far, it doesn't seem to be any connection with the Valentines. But people like Valentine make a lot of enemies. That girl doesn't figure.
Yeah.
I know you talked to her a lot these last couple of days, Johnny. What'd you say?
Oh, nothing that had anything to do with this. You know yourself she didn't even know her name was Valentine until her father got shot at.
Yeah, that could have been an act.
And you could have been 20 feet tall.
Just trying.
Try with that punk you got upstairs in the hospital.
We will, Johnny. We will. Just... pardon me. Johnny, I got bad news. Maybe I spoke too soon.
Why?
Sisto Chianti died 5 minutes ago.
Expense account, item 10, $10, car rental. I went out to the Valentine house once more.
Oh, Mr. Dollar.
Hello, Mrs. Iacino.
Please, come in. So many policemen, so many reporters. I've been trying to close the house.
Sure.
I know how you must feel. I mean about her. What of these Chianti brothers?
Well, we don't know much about them yet. The New York police are still doing a rundown on them. Don't let me stop you, whatever you're doing. I'll just look around, if you don't mind.
All right.
Oh, well, one thing.
Yes?
Did Mr. Valentine make any provision for you?
Yeah. He thought of me. $1,000. Whatever he was, the man I knew was kind and good. And his sins had been forgiven him.
I spent 2 hours or better going from room to room, looking at the oils that Dan Valentine had painted. Pastoral scenes, happy scenes, gay scenes, all of them with colorful Italian backgrounds. I was thinking about that when I walked into Inspector DeBacca's office late that afternoon.
I don't get it, Johnny.
Don't get what?
Here. This came from New York on the Chianti boys.
Oh?
They came to this country when they were 18 and 21. Both of them were naturalized citizens, lived with their father.
Records?
Not a thing. No trouble ever.
What else?
That's about it. New York police can't seem to locate their old man. Disappeared about a week ago. Lived on the east side.
What's about him?
Well, that's another funny thing. He's taken out his papers and was due for an examination with the immigration people this week. They're looking for him, too.
We went out and had dinner together and talked about the case. It had been a strange one. The deaths were useless, the motives unknown. I parted company with Inspector DeBacca and went back to my hotel to trouble it out with sleep. About 11 o'clock, I had a phone call. Johnny Dollar.
This is DeBacca. Old man Chianti just showed up at our city morgue and wants to take his two sons back to New York for burial.
20 minutes later, I was standing in the coroner's office while Inspector DeBacca led a small, wizened old man into the room and sat him down on one of the chairs.
Mr. Chianti, it's Mr. Dollar.
How do you do?
Mr. Chianti.
I read about you. You killed my boys. Is it so?
Yes. They'd killed 4 other people.
I know. But...
why did they kill the Valentine family, Mr. Chianti? Why did they kill Conrad Webster, the lawyer? Do you know why?
See, I know.
Then tell me. They're all dead now.
I'm still alive, Mr. Dollar.
He refused to talk about his sons or any of their activities. DeBacca held him to answer to the immigration officials. He remained in his cell, silent and noncommittal to all visitors, including the chaplain. I appeared before the coroner's jury the following morning and was cleared of any charges. Pietro Chianti still had said nothing. And he looked at me as though he was going to keep on saying nothing. Mr. Chianti?
I see you, Mr. Dollar. More questions?
Dan Valentine's wife was your daughter, wasn't she? Wasn't she? All right, you don't have to admit it. I have a copy of the marriage license right here. It came from New York this morning.
She was my daughter.
Is that all you have to say now?
I no talk.
Then I will, Mr. Chianti. Because your daughter, Mrs. Valentine, had a daughter herself, Teresa. A lovely, wonderful girl that your two sons killed. I happen to know that girl. I might have been in love with her, I don't know. But I do know...
she had to die, too.
What?
This Conrad Webster, Mr. Valentine, and my own daughter and granddaughter, they had to die. All bad.
You?
See, I order it.
You ordered it? And who are you? God?
I am the father. When a daughter marries a bad man, only bad can come from it. The granddaughter was then bad. He come to our village many years ago. Take her away. He and the man Webster help him. It lived with me. The stealing of my own flesh and blood. All this time, it grow inside of me. I am old, but I keep on living. Only so I can come here and find him and destroy him. And her, and the daughter, and the lawyer man who help him. And I destroyed them through my sons.
A whole family. Vendetta. Was that it?
If you like, vendetta. He was a bad man who did bad things. Bad man. I smoke now. You have a cigar, eh?
The disposition of old Pietro Chianti is up to the Immigration Department. I didn't stay around New Orleans to learn the results of all the extensive examinations that would have to be completed to test his sanity. I'd had enough of the town. Expense account, item 11, $140.20, hotel and board. Item 12, $28, car rental miscellaneous. That includes flowers to the Valentine family. Item 13, same as item 1, $175. Transportation back home. Expense account total, $1,290.38. Remarks? Whenever I close my eyes, I can see a lovely girl standing at the bottom of a long, curving stairway, smiling, because I'm in the room. That's all. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Remember, please, there'll be another exciting story for you beginning next Monday night.
Monday, the Lorco Diamond Matter, in which a trip to Algiers makes Come With Me to the Casbah sound like an invitation to a Sunday school picnic. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in this week's cast were Lillian Baeff, Betty Lou Gerson, Barney Phillips, Will Wright, Forrest Lewis, Marvin Miller, Jay Novello, and Jack Boyles. Be sure to join us on Monday night, same time and station, for another exciting story of Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, on Tuned to Yesterday from the 4th of November, 1955 on CBS. This is an hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Livonier. Now time for The Adventures of Marco Polo, Episode 5 in a continuing series from the 1940s.
Present The Adventures of Marco Polo. Marco Polo, together with his father, his uncle, and his servant Benno, was imprisoned by Prince Alauddin, a notorious robber, who was known as the Old Man of the Mountain. Marco Polo and his companions were on their way to Persia when they were waylaid by Prince Alauddin and his soldiers and taken to the castle. There they were drugged with hashish, and they passed through an extraordinary experience, first imagining that they were in paradise. After they passed through this first experience, they were visited by Prince Alauddin, who informed them that the second effect of the drug would make them wish to kill each other. The prince then left Marco Polo with his father and his uncle. After a while, the lust to kill seized possession of the three men. They quarreled violently. Marco Polo raised his hand to strike his uncle. Then his father, Niccolo, intervened.
Marco, stay your hand. This is madness. Can you not understand? Madness caused by that drug.
My uncle Matthew has insulted me for years. He hates me.
I do hate you. Strike me at your own risk, Marco Polo.
Mayhap the madness of the drug is passing from me. Can you not understand? You do not hate each other. Marco, you are my son. Hear me. You must not strike your uncle.
The madness of the drug. I remember now. Did not the Old Man of the Mountain say we would desire to kill each other? I am consumed with rage. Mad to kill my uncle. But I must not. I must not.
Seat yourself in that divan, my son. Tell yourself that you must not kill. The drug must not drive you to such madness.
I must not kill. I must not kill. And yet my uncle stands there leering at me. I desire to strike him down.
My son, hear me. Try to be calm. Your uncle means you no harm.
I do mean him harm, the young upstart. How dare he threaten me?
Matthew, you are also under the effect of the drug. Go you to the far end of the room as I do as I bid you. Think you not that I was not possessed of the madness? I felt a surge of rage, a desire to kill, but it has passed.
My madness is passing too. I ask your pardon, my uncle.
You may well ask my pardon.
Peace, peace, Matthew.
My brain is clouded. I feel that I will swoon.
Please, help him. Now, rest here a while. May the Lord be praised that the madness passed from me, and that I was able to make peace between you.
The madness is passing from me. No longer do I see a red mist before my eyes. No longer do I wish to kill. Oh, I ask your pardon, Marco.
And I ask yours, my uncle.
May heaven be praised. The madness has passed from all of us. The Old Man of the Mountain has failed to make us kill each other.
But what will he do now?
Mayhap he will order his soldiers to put us to death.
To put us to death?
Yes.
I thirsted for adventure, and now I have found it. We are strong, resourceful men. We will find some way to escape from here.
But what has become of poor Benno?
Look, someone enters the curtains now.
It is Benno.
He carries a knife.
Benno! We give you greeting. We are glad that you are still alive.
You have ruled me and given me your orders long enough. Now I will kill you all. And you shall be the first to die, Marco Polo.
Have a care, Marco. He is seized with the madness of the drug. Benno, put up that knife.
I say you shall die, you dog.
Benno, you know not what you say.
I have come here to kill you. They gave me the knife. They told me that you desired my death. But I shall not die. Take this knife in your heart, Marco Polo.
Not so, Benno, I have your wrist.
Oh, let me go, dog. I hate you.
Benno, you are seized by madness. Drop the knife as Marco bid you.
Do not break his arm, Marco.
I will not break his arm.
Benno, you must drop that knife.
I obey, Marco Polo.
It is well.
Would that I had been given strength to kill you. I hate you, you dog.
Benno, you do not hate me. You are under the influence of a dangerous drug, Benno. We had the desire to kill each other. Come, rest here, Benno. Soon you will recover.
I feel ill. I know not what ails me.
We know what ails you, Benno. We have suffered as you have. Now rest quietly. Soon you will recover. The madness passes very quickly.
I know not whether I am mad or dead. I have had strange dreams. I thought I was in paradise. Beauteous maidens surrounded me, offering me rich foods and wine. I am no ladies' man, as you know, sirs, but one of these beauteous maidens stroked my head gently. Her hands were so cool. Her eyes were like limpid pools.
Oh.
She must have been an angel.
No angel, Benno.
But how do you know that, Marco Polo?
Beauteous maidens attended us. I know not whether we dreamt of their presence or whether they were sent by the old man of the mountain so that we might believe we were in paradise.
Did I really strive to kill you, Marco Polo?
You did. That knife lies on the floor to prove it.
Oh, I ask your pardon. You are my master. I have served you faithfully for many years. I crave your forgiveness.
You need not my forgiveness, Benno.
You were not master of yourself, Benno.
This old man of the mountain is a devil. He has bewitched us.
So far we have defeated him. We must find a way to escape from his clutches. That drug which he calls hashish is powerful. Mayhap it would be useful to the people of Venice.
Ah, foolish words, Marco Polo. What use could the people of Venice find for hashish?
Well, the soldiers of Venice need courage when it comes to war. Mayhap the drug would not be so useful. Still, I would like to take some back with me if we ever do manage to return.
Someone comes now.
Oh, it is the old man of the mountain.
Ah. This is a pleasant surprise. I did not expect to find all four of my captives alive.
We are all alive, almost hyphen. And now we demand our freedom.
It is strange to find you all alive. Did you not desire to kill each other?
We did have that desire, but we resisted it.
Mayhap we did not give you enough of the drug. Mayhap you of the outside world have more power to resist it.
We have resisted it, and we now wish to continue our journey.
You say that you are going to visit the Khan of Persia. He is my enemy.
We are not your enemies. We are peaceful travelers.
Do you not desire to stay here at this castle? Do you not desire to live a life of luxury and ease and to serve that prince who is called the Old Man of the Mountain?
We merely desire to proceed on our journey.
You are ungrateful. You desire your freedom. But I am reluctant to let you go. You will remain here. You may roam around the castle grounds, but you must not go past the castle gates, which will be closely guarded.
Oh. What is that noise? What has happened now?
The alarm gongs have sounded. The castle is attacked. The Khan of Persia is making another attempt on the castle. He has vowed to make the road safe for travelers.
Oh, they'll attack those tribesmen. The Khan of Persia is once more striving against you.
Many times has he strived to defeat me, and always he has failed. Have the gates manned. Let them attack our mountain fastness. We are prepared. We have food and water in plenty. Let the walls be manned.
It shall be so. Has your highness any commands in regard to these prisoners?
They will provide us with further amusement later on. We may even press them into service to repel the invaders. Call upon them if you want them. They are free to roam around the castle. I go now to arm my men.
You prisoners will keep away from the gates and walls. If you will attempt to escape, you will be killed. I go now to attend the prince.
I only hope and pray that the Khan of Persia will be successful in destroying this castle.
If he does, he may put us to death. He may think we are in the army.
If only we could find some way to aid the Khan of Persia, to bring about the defeat of this royal robber.
Well, I, for one, intend to take a walk in the castle grounds. Let us view the hostilities. And who knows, by some strange means, we may be able to assist the Khan of Persia.
Come, we are free to leave this room.
Marco Polo and his father Niccolo and his uncle Matthew strolled through the castle grounds, and their servant Benno walked a few paces behind them. They observed all the preparations that were being made to repel the invaders. They then strolled along to the rear of the castle, and there Marco climbed on a high rock. He discovered that he could view the activities.
If I jump from this rock, I can just reach the top of the wall. And at the foot of the wall is a tortuous mountain path.
What of it? What of it? Come down from there, Marco.
I can make my escape over this wall, and I can lead the soldiers of the Khan of Persia up this path. They can place an object beside the wall and climb over it. Then they can attack the castle of Prince Alauddin from the rear. This must be a secret path, known only to the inhabitants of the castle.
How do you know that this path leads to the foot of the mountain? You may not be able to reach the army of the Khan of Persia.
Well, at least I can try. Now, be of good heart. I swear I will return. One of us must go for help.
Wait a minute, Marco. If the prince finds that you have escaped, he may put us to death.
Paul, do not tell him that I have escaped. This is a desperate chance to win freedom and to overthrow this mountain robber so that the roads will be safe for travelers. Now, guard yourselves and pray.
But I return.
Look, he is clambering over the top of the wall.
Oh, he will never reach the top safely. Make him return.
Let him go. Ah, my son is brave. Look, he has gone now. We can only pray that he will have returned safely.
He is very foolish. He will run us into danger.
No, my son is very brave. Through him we may be saved.
I wish I had gone with my master. I might have been able to help him.
No, he is better alone. But look, the old man of the mountain comes this way.
Well, my friends, the battle has not yet started. But the army of the Khan will never be able to reach the gates. Since every time they attempt to climb the mountain, great boulders will be pushed down upon them. Our preparations are completed. You see, there is already a clear space before they can possibly reach the gates of the castle. They cannot take cover, but we have need of every man.
Oh, most noble prince, we will go and rest in the castle now.
One moment. I said, did I not, that we have need of every man. Where is that other man, that tall young stripling? Your son, Marco Polo. I have work for him.
He rests in the castle at present.
Go, bring him at once. Bring him before me. The old man of the mountains has spoken.
The Adventures of Marco Polo on Tuned to Yesterday, Episode 5, in a series of 52 broadcasts released by the George Edwards Players back in 1940. We continue now with an episode of Firefighters, Episode 11, from November 28, 1949.
Five bells. Stand by all stations.
Attention, all districts. A five-alarm fire. Five bells. Move in immediately.
That's it. Let's roll. Let's go. Firefighters. Presenting Firefighters. The true-to-life story of our unsung heroes who stand ready to ride by day or night against our most murderous enemy, the demon of fire. In just a minute, we'll join Tim Collins, rookie fireman, at the scene of his epic battle against the fire demon in the burning warehouse to which Chief Cody has called all available apparatus with a special fourth alarm. Tim, apparently out of his head with smoke poisoning, is alone in the fourth floor of the building. Before rescue begins, we'll take just a minute to bring you this message. Let's go, firefighters! Let's go to the spot outside the burning warehouse where Chief Cody is planning his rescue of Tim Collins. A few minutes ago, you remember, Tim lowered to safety his comrade, Private Murphy, who cradled in his arms the semi-conscious form of the warehouse watchman. As the two men swung from the end of the lifeline, Chief Cody reached up to ease them to the ground.
All right, Murphy. There, I've got your foot.
Almost down, Chief. There, that does it.
You men, take this fellow to first aid. Who is it, Murphy?
I don't know, sir.
Here, lie down. They'll be back with a stretcher for you.
I don't know who he is, sir.
It must be the watchman.
He was pinned under a packing case, sir. Collins found him in the smoke and brought him out. I don't like the way Collins is acting, sir.
What do you mean? That boy's a brave one. You don't mean he...
I mean, he's acting kind of wild, sir. The smoke... It might be smoke poisoning, sir.
Smoke poisoning? That's bad. That can make a man crazy.
He was... Collins
now, don't
was...
try to talk, Murphy. You're in bad shape yourself. Stretcher! This way with the stretcher. Get this man to first aid. And you there, you men, get that ladder up fast, because I'm right on your heels.
Come out. come out and show yourself. I'm not afraid of fire. I knocked down the biggest fire that ever was. Come on, you fire. Show yourself if you are.
Holland, over here.
Huh? Who's that? Who said that?
Holland, come out of that smoke. Get down, you fool.
Ah, I see you. I see you over by the window. Come on in. Somebody pushed me. How do you know somebody pushed me? Hey. Hey, who pushed me? What's the idea?
I'm coming after you, Collins. Don't get up. Stay down. Stay out of that smoke.
Come on, Collins. Pull yourself together. We've got to get out of here.
No. Gotta stay. Look. See that stuff smoldering? It was the fire there. Just put him out.
You've eaten too much smoke, boy. You're going to be sick. Now, come on out of this.
Look, was a fire there.
Yeah, sure. Before we get out of here, there's apt to be a lot more.
Fire. Because it got so hot, you know? Got so hot from below. Fire start up here. Oh, but I won't let him start. I got fire extinguisher.
Sure, I see. It's empty, boy. So let's start moving.
No.
Now, come on, will you? Will you listen to reason?
No, I gotta stay here. Heat gets too hot.
Tim, boy, I'm an old man. Now, help me get out of here.
Huh? Help?
Yes. Help me get over to the window, Tim.
Oh, sure, Chief, sure. I'll get you out. Strong as a horse, that's Tim Collins. Yeah. I'll get you out and then come back here with my extinguisher.
That's right. Anything you say.
Yeah.
Only come on. Get me over to the window.
Yeah, good old chief. You just clean everything to Tim. Tim will take care of you, good old chief.
You men, lend a hand here.
Got you, Chief Cody? Hey, you can stand up now. The air's all right here by the window.
Right. Let me alone. Let me go back. Let me back. Knock down that fire.
Watch him. He's full of smoke. When that air hits his lungs, he'll...
Let me...
Hey, you said it, Chief. One minute he's a wild man, then as soon as he breathes in the fresh air, he's out like a light.
Is he hurt?
No, Joe caught him in time. Broke the fall. That kid's as heavy as a ton of bricks. What a man. Thinks he's a one-man fire department.
You now. Stand by with that hose. I want to take Collins down the ladder.
There's no fire showing here, Chief.
No, but it's overdue. If it wasn't for Collins with the extinguisher, it would be blazing now.
Where's it the hottest, Chief?
Over there, where Collins was staggering around.
Okay.
Now, the minute we're out of your way, hit it with plenty of water.
Right.
Lower that temperature so this floor won't be gutted like the one just below.
Standing by, sir. Ready, Joe?
Here we go. Heavy is right. Get myself set on the ladder. Ease Collins down between me and the ladder. All right, men. All set here. Open her up and drown her.
Yes, sir, Chief. And a fire, Joe.
Let me out. My arms are tied. Take the ropes off. Hey, let me out.
Hey, Mr. Fireman, it's all right. You should lie quiet.
Who's that?
It's only me, Napoleon Bonaparte.
Huh? It's only Napoleon Bonaparte?
Now you wake up for true, huh? You don't remember it, huh?
Remember? I remember I was up in that warehouse up on the fourth floor. It was full of smoke, and I was with Murphy. Yeah, it was Murphy.
Huh? What is the make of this?
My first real fire, and I must have passed out. Oh, good grief. I must have been overcome just as soon as we went into that floor, and I suppose Murphy had to drag me out.
Please, Murphy drag? No, please. It's not Mr. Murphy drag. It's you drag.
Huh?
It's you find me under the packing case, very sick. It's you drag me to the window. It's you make a rope, throw out of the window Mr. Murphy and Mr. Bonaparte all two together.
Bonaparte?
That's the second time you said that.
What do I know? It's my name. Mr. Fireman, pleased to make acquaintance of Mr. Napoleon Bonaparte, your very good friend.
Ah.
Your good friend forever, because you saved me when I burned.
I did?
You did for true.
Well, what do you know about that? Oh. Hey, some of the companies are pulling out. A fire must be under control.
Ah, the fire. She's one very bad fire. Yeah. Now she's washed up. She's drowned. She don't burn Napoleon, however she tried.
Say, come to think of it, what were you doing up there on that fourth floor, Mr. Bonaparte?
Me?
Yeah.
It's my duty that. I'm a watchman, you see. Watchman for this warehouse. I'm in a building way up, high up, and I say, Napoleon, what is this you smell? Fire?
Making your rounds, were you?
For Drew. So I look.
In the fourth floor?
In the fourth floor. Uh-huh. I say, me, I'll find this fire, squirt with the extinguisher, be a big hero, maybe get a raise. I think fire may be over in the packing cases. Huh? Sniff. No fire here. But crash.
Oh, I get it now. You tipped over that packing case, the one that had you pinned down to the floor.
Uh-huh. Crash. Uh-huh. So Mr. Bonaparte, he goes to sleep. Wake up on a sidewalk, wrapped up in the blankets like a big baby.
That makes a pair of us. Mr. Bonaparte, have you any idea what could have started that fire?
That's a great mystery, no? For a whole week, he shut up tight the third floor. He's waiting for painters to come back, finish up.
Painters? There were painters working in that part of the warehouse? Uh-huh, now we're beginning to get somewhere.
Pick up your hose lines. Second and third call companies. Pick up your lines and pull out. First call companies. Overhaul that wreckage.
Chief Cody.
Huh? Oh, yes, Doctor. How's young Collins coming along?
First rate, Chief. He'll be fit for duty tomorrow.
Fine, fine. And that watchman, can I talk to him yet?
Anytime you like. In fact, he's talking a blue streak to Private Collins right now.
Well, now maybe we'll find out how this fire began.
Now, that's one thing the fire chief always wants to know. Just how did the fire start? And here, the watchman insists that the origin of the fire is all a great mystery. But maybe Tim Collins and Chief Cody are on the right track. From the clues you've already heard, see if you can figure it out yourself. And to confirm your conclusions, listen to our next true-to-life episode of The Firefighters. And now Chief Bob Cody with a special assignment for all young firefighters. Chief Cody.
Hello, boys and girls. This is your friend, Chief Cody, and here is your special assignment. You are to remember this fact about an emergency caused by fire. If there is smoke thick enough so that you can't see through it easily, get down on the floor. Yes, sir. Get down on the floor and crawl to safety, because smoke tends to rise, leaving the air near the floor cleaner, safer to breathe. Now, this is an important fact. One of the first important facts we firefighters learn. That is all, and goodbye for now.
Fire Chief Cody and the young rookie fireman Tim Collins will be back at the same time on the same station when you hear...
That's it. Let's roll!
Firefighters on Tuned to Yesterday from the 28th of November, 1949. That was episode 11, and we close out this hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday with episode 5 in the series, The Man in the Iron Mask. This is from 1948.
The Man in the Iron Mask. An adaptation of Alexandre Dumas' famous novel, specially written for radio by Eric Scott and a George Edwards production. It seems that young Edmund Marchiali is connected in some way with the destiny of France. For when he shows interest in and wants to marry a farmer's daughter near his guardian's estate, this guardian, Georges Chamar, is most perturbed and sends for the powerful Cardinal Mazarin, who rules behind the throne. When all efforts on the part of the guardian have failed, the cardinal suggests the dungeons of the Bastille.
Yes, my dear Chamar, that is the only way.
The Bastille? Oh, Cardinal, is there no other way?
You yourself said that you were powerless to stop this marriage, but it must be prevented.
Yes, Cardinal, yes, I understand that. But she's such a lovely young girl. Fair hair, blue eyes, lovely voice, and intelligence to match.
Intelligence? A farmer's daughter?
Yes. Oh, if only she were somebody of quality.
My dear Samar, you know in the interests of France that your ward must never marry.
It has worried me a great deal. Eventually, he will find someone else, and then...
You have been given a sacred charge. If ever the occasion arises again, call on me. I'll deal with it as I have handled this emergency. The girl's name was...
Marguerite Frederick.
And where is she to be found?
The farm of Papa Frederick. He's quite well known in the district.
Good. Don't worry yourself any further, my dear Samar. The matter will be attended to. The girl will vanish from the face of the earth.
Poor Margaret.
She has impressed even you. She must be a beauty.
Beauty of mind and beauty of body. A shame that so much has to be sacrificed.
It is for France.
Yes, Cardinal. It is for France.
This war for forever and ever.
Forever and ever? Oh, my dear, how tired your little feet would be.
Not with you. Oh, it's such a lovely night.
The moon.
All the lovelier because it makes the stars so bright. Look up there, Edmund. Bright, bright stars.
Astronomers say that they are worlds. Worlds like this.
Could they be, then?
If one can believe astronomers.
But of course one believes the astronomers. Don't they map out the fate of all the nobles of France, even the king? Papa says that there are astronomers who know when you will be born, when you will die, everything that happens in your life. Oh, they must be such clever men.
That's one thing I can't understand. How they can find all that out up there in those heavens.
I wonder if there are people like us up there, Edmund. People in those other worlds. Walking along a country road under starry heaven. And so much in love.
Oh, no.
You don't think so?
No, my heart. Because nobody could be happier than you and me. Nobody could be so much in love.
Oh, darling.
I could kiss you again. A warm body so alive. Lips like silk. Marguerite, may I say something?
Let me hear.
If anything happened to you, I think I'd die. I've read of love, the fact that two people become as one. I feel that that is how it is with us. We are one. Without you, I'd be like a man with his arm or his leg cut off. His hair.
You frighten me. Oh, perhaps it's wrong to love as we do. Is it, Edmund? There's a God up there amongst all those worlds. Perhaps we should love him first.
But that's a heavenly love, my dear. We worship him, yes. Then after that worship comes another kind. That which belongs to the earth. Darling, will you make me a promise?
Anything, Edmund.
That bright star up there, I don't know what the astronomers call it, but whenever we are apart at night before our marriage, Look up to that star, won't you? Say to yourself, that's our star. And wherever I am, I'm what you're thinking. And I look for our star too, and that somehow will bring us together until we meet again.
Oh, what a lovely thought. Our star. From which we'll never be parted for long, will we, Edmund?
When I leave you, my darling, I shall go back and talk with my guardian. I want to marry you as soon as possible.
He doesn't like me.
Yes, he does. He's a dear old man, really. Let him get used to the idea, and I think that Uncle George will welcome you as a daughter. I know his kind heart.
This, Your Majesty, is a permit to occupy the holdings of four peasant farmers in Versailles.
Oh. Oh, yes, yes, of course. Extensions to the palace.
Correct, Your Majesty. It might interest you to know that the Hall of Mirrors will soon be finished.
Excellent, excellent. All our faults will be magnified 1,000 times. That's good, Cardinal.
Very good, Your Majesty.
Yes, except that I have an abnormal headache this morning. How many more of these objectionable documents do I have to sign?
Oh, there's only one more, Your Majesty. A mere nothing. The arrest of a peasant woman, if you will sign here.
Oh, yes, Cardinal. What has she done? Stolen something?
No, a nuisance politically.
And a woman, too.
Yes, but they can be dangerous, as you know. This document will put her away where she won't do anybody any harm.
Oh, splendid, splendid. Oh, well, well, take all these papers away. I don't want to see anything more until tomorrow. Oh, and I wish you could put me away today. Me with my head. I think it was a very bad vintage last night. Something must be done about my wine.
Yes, Your Majesty. I will see that the cellars are rechecked.
Your niece, Cardinal. I haven't seen her these last 3 days.
No, Your Majesty. I plan to send her into the country. The Paris air is not good for her.
Oh. And I thought she thrived exceedingly well. She is most popular at court. I hope I shall have the honor of seeing Maria today.
She is not herself.
Oh, you're a stern uncle. See to it, Cardinal. I would like to see her again.
As you say, Your Majesty.
And so I am going to lose my little girl.
Oh, don't say that, Papa. You'll never lose me, you know that.
I wish I did know it, Marguerite. I knew that someday a young man would come along and take you away, but never such a one as this.
You like him?
Who am I to like or dislike? He is the gentry. That frightens me a little, Marguerite.
Me too, Papa. Oh, but we love each other so much. I fear we'll overcome the difficulty.
You will, perhaps, because you have youth on your side and beauty in the manner of a lady. But your old papa, why, look at me, Marguerite. I have been a farmer all my life. I will not belong to the pattern.
You will be near me, Papa. Always.
When your mother died and you somehow stepped into her shoes, I felt I still had your mother with me, in you, because you have her eyes. Her smile, and even her voice.
And I have her loyalty, too. You see. Oh, I'll never desert you, Papa. If the time ever came that Edmund and I should be forced to live in some other part, you would come with us.
Will you promise me that, Marguerite? I'm getting old now, and there's no one else but you.
I promise.
Ah, it's good to hear. I'm a happy man, and a lucky man, too. A good farm, and a good daughter. Who comes at this time of night?
Open in the name of the King of France.
The King? King of France.
Oh, dear. What is this? Monsieur?
We look for Marguerite Frederick.
I am Marguerite Frederick.
What is this, Captain?
Stay where you are, old man. Our business is not with you. Madam, I'm very glad that you come with us.
With you?
Yes.
But where? Why? I don't understand.
You are not in a position to ask questions. Come with us and step inside the carriage that we have waiting.
Oh, no, monsieur. If I don't know where I'm going...
It is not for you to argue.
Oh, let me go!
Let my daughter alone.
Out of the way, old man. And you, madam, don't offer too much resistance. This is an order from the King of France.
Oh, no, no. Where are you taking me?
To the end of your destination.
Oh, I must know, my fiancé. Papa, tell Edmund. Oh, monsieur, if you will tell me. Tell me what it means and where I'm going.
I'm sorry. All I can tell you is that you go to the end of your destination. Now come.
No, no, no. Oh, monsieur, you will give me time. My fiancé, Edmund. Please, give me time.
No more words, madam. Into this carriage. Throwing the struggling girl into a waiting carriage, the soldiers drove off, leaving a pitiful old man staring into the darkness, straining to hear the last of the carriage wheels rumbling away. What will Edmund do when he finds that his beloved has been taken to some unnamed destination? And what of the undying love of these two fine young people? Make sure you hear the next enthralling chapter of The Man in the Iron Mask.
The Man in the Iron Mask, on Tuned to Yesterday, episode 5 in that syndicated series from 1948, bringing the curtain down on this hour of continuing series on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next week at the same time as we continue more of these programs from Radio's Past. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark Levonier. Thanks for listening.